Hi, I'm Jen Suliafu, and I'm delighted to be on this journey with you. Life is an exciting game with many twists and turns. It gets really good when we begin to learn how it works and how to win. I believe that no matter where someone's life is at, we have the power to make radical shifts to create a life that truly honors us. I live for awakenings, so let's get to it, darlings. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. Okay, I'm super hyped about today because I get to have, I often get asked, Jen, who's your mentor? Who's your teacher? Who do you go to? And I get to have my mentor and teacher on today that I got to share with you guys. She has so much wisdom. We're just going to hop right into it because it's going to be fabulous and I know you're going to love it. So please welcome my mentor, Tina Falk. Hello, Tina. Welcome.
Hello, and hello, everybody.
Glad you're here with me.
is such an honor to get invited into your space. So thank you. You're doing remarkable work.
Thank you. I'm so excited to have you on. Anytime I get to talk to you, I just am happy because I learn. I get massive nuggets of wisdom. She's such a wise soul. When I signed up with Tina to go on the journey of, I'll just tell you guys really quick. Years ago, it was 2013. I totally remember. I moved away. I don't know if I ever mentioned this on our last segment, which by the way, you guys, if you didn't watch our last segment, I had Tina on, I think it was last, it had to have been last year.
We talked a little bit about the new year coming in.
Yeah. If you haven't watched that, go back in the notes, find it. It was a great segment where she told us about feng shui, the world of feng shui. But what happened was I was in a space, this is really important to share because I feel like people just have no idea. When they hear feng shui, they're like, huh, cool. I've maybe read a little bit about it, seen an article, maybe heard someone talk about, you know, feng shui. But to explain to people really the journey of feng shui, it's really hard to even put into words. So I want to share this little, my little story of how I was even led to Tina. So I was 2012, my husband had gotten an opportunity to move out of state. He got a position in Nevada. We moved to Nevada. While we were moving, my mother-in-law gave me a book from Barnes & Noble on feng shui. She knew I loved design. I loved to like look at, you know, make my space comfortable and happy and all of the things. And she handed me, she didn't know anything about feng shui. I don't know if I ever even shared this with you, but she didn't even know anything about it, which is funny because it was obviously very divine for her to put that book in my hands. But I ended up moving and then I get into this book and I get so excited about it that I start searching to learn about feng shui. Well, now I live in Nevada and the one person I find is you, Tina Falk, and she lives right where I just moved from, which was so bizarre. Well, I was like, dang it, are you serious? Why did I not know she was right by me when I lived there? Why did I not even know any of this? And I continued to learn and study. Well, then I found out I was moving back less than a year later. And so the first thing I did was look you up, call you, reach out to you, and come studying under your wing. And it was such a huge turning point in my life. So huge. I had no idea the magnitude that you, the effect you would have on my life and my healing and my marriage and my past trauma and my relationship with my children. And so it was almost like this little wounded duckling bird finding her mama. Like I was like, help me. And you opened up your heart with such a space of healing for me with no judgment. I remember I had so much shame and fear and guilt from things I'd gone through. And you were just so open-hearted. And I just am so grateful for you. So that's mm-hmm. Tina. That's how I found her.
Yeah, you were, I didn't see the wounded little bird full of shame. It's not what I saw at all or what I felt. You were so eager and you were so open. You had so many questions. Your curiosity is, I think, really what guided you. I was just like, okay, you know, you asked this question, I can lead you this direction to find this answer. I don't think you're giving yourself enough credit. Your curiosity, and I think that's such an important thing to have these days, is to be curious and not to settle in a comfortable place that's like, oh, that feels true. Just keep asking. I'm even like in this business that I'm in, feng shui and Chinese astrology, I question it all the time. I question the validity of it. Why am I doing this? Should I be teaching this? And then I'm always reminded, I come full circle, or I make a shift because I want to make it applicable to today, because this is an ancient system. You know, we're talking 4,000, 5,000 year old system that it's like, it's some of it's kind of outdated, you know, it's because of the way that the system was written and the way men's roles and women's roles were back then. So how can I shift it, or how can I make it ring true for today? So thank you for your curiosity. You were one of my very first students when my feng shui master gifted me her school, and it was such a joy. And then to, you know, form a relationship with you and your family through it, that was a bonus. Not just the people you live with, but your extended family too was a bonus to me.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Oh, I love what you just said though, when you make feng shui your own, in a sense, like you make what you transform it into what makes sense to you. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many things in life, in the spiritual world, that people don't, it doesn't resonate with them. It doesn't feel right to them. And so they just leave it, or they try so hard to get their head to wrap around it. And I think in feng shui, especially in feng shui, it's like, if you can make it your own and you can go, oh, at the end of the day, how does this make me feel, this principle, or, you know, whatever you're doing in your space, how does it make you feel? And if it helps you, if it makes you feel good, if it raises your vibration, your positivity, then you're doing it right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think everything is feng shui. To me, feng shui is just the practice of mindfulness, being conscious about your own personal energy in your relationship to external energy, whether it's the person you're sitting next to at a cubicle at work, or the people you share your home with, or the people that live across the street. It's just understanding that relationship and creating a space that's supportive, right? That's reciprocal, that feeds. If it doesn't, then we shift, right? We quit that job, or we get fired. You know, those things happen for reasons. And so I think that's important. And it's something I stress with all my current, you know, the students that go through my training program, because is make it your own. I'm going to tell you these fundamentals. I'm going to teach them to you, and I want them to be ingrained in you. But just like my feng shui master, once you know the rules, then go break them. Go make them work for you. And the best feng shui practitioners are those that, and people who practice feng shui, experiment with it. Because there's no cookie cutter anything, especially when we're talking about energy and life and seasons and people growing and dying. There's nothing that says this is the way it needs to be done. And so many times when I'm even working with specific things that I placed around my home, you know, back when I started, I was into the trinkets and having the crystals and stuff. And they're all in a crate in my basement right now. It's just, for me, it's, I'm realizing that I'm the feng shui cure. Mm-hmm. When I walk into the space and give the space my love and attention and intention, that's what activates the space. If I neglect the space, it's not getting my vibes. It's not getting my energy. Just like a relationship. If I'm not keeping in contact, or if I'm not expressing my love and my gratitude for this person, I'm not providing good vibes or good feng shui to that situation. So there's so many times though that when I'm, you know, walking out of my space, when it's like, oh, well, because of this school and because of the timing of this, I should move this over here, like according to Flying Stars feng shui. But I'll go to move it and I can't move it. It's like, no, I got to leave it there for a little bit longer. So it's playing with the energy. And the feng shui to me opens our minds to, oh, wow, we have stuff we can work with, stuff that we can engage with, even though it might feel like it's just a color on a wall or something symbolic that represents something. No, it's an energy that triggers an energy within us. And you talk about that stuff all the time. And I think it's important that we understand that it's not just us and them or us and this. We need to form relationships with everything in our lives.
Yeah. Wow. Well, with you, your space, I can't even explain how your space feels. Like when I came to your office, when I came to your home, it's just like, that makes perfect sense, because I love how you said, I'm the feng shui cure, because your space is amazing. I always wonder, like, we have this saying in my family, okay, we need to feng shui. We need to feng shui the bedroom. We need to feng shui the whole house, top to bottom. We've been living out of suitcases because we've been traveling or whatever. We come home, the house is a disaster. Is your house ever a disaster, Tina?
There's some rooms I have no control over. You know, I have a 25-year-old son in the basement. And at one point he had over 20 arachnids, spiders, scorpions.
Wow.
My husband's
oh my gosh.
Studio. And they're both of them are in the same sector. They're both in the helpful people sector, the Northwest sector, which is your spirituality. So here I've got my son in the basement, the kitchen on the main floor, and then my husband's studio above that. And he's got three snakes in there, aside from all the audio video components, and the floor is covered in cords, just twisting and turning. The closet you can't open because it's packed full of boxes he might need someday. You know, it's just, and there's foam stuck to all the walls and ceiling for sound. And so it's really easy to get frustrated and want to go in there and clean up. That's not my space, right? I wouldn't want them to come mess up my space any more than they would want me to come clean up their space. So I have to change the way I look at the space and my relationship with the space and say, okay, my husband, he is my number one helpful person.
Mm.
He is the guy that has never said no to me.
Yeah.
Oh, you want to spend 4 years at an art school? Okay. We don't have any money, but we'll make it work. You know, oh, you want to go become a feng shui practitioner? Whatever. Have fun. He's my number one guy that I go to if I need a problem solved. He's always been there for me. Yeah. We're 34 and a half years into our relationship. He's the guy. So I just look at, if he's happy in that room and he's surrounded by things that give him joy, then let it be. Yeah. That's what it's going to look like. And I have to surrender to that and say, it is what it is. And he is so important to me that that's not worth the fight. It's not worth the power struggle. And so I'm going to let him have that.
That's amazing.
Well, I pray for my son to move out. Just I love kidding. Him and I don't ever want him to leave, but
we don't really want you to move out. We're kidding. Oh my gosh. That's amazing. That, when you said that you have to change the way you look at things and also that you're the cure, mm-hmm. It made me think about when I first started feng shui and I remember you said, okay, once you go on this journey, you never go back. Like your eyes are open to certain things that you can't not see from now on, you know? Mm-hmm. But at the time I was a sales rep going into nursing homes, hospitals, places where people were sick, where they were sad, where they were afraid. And I remember going, oh boy, you know, as I'm learning all these things, as I'm reading, as I'm studying and going, oh my gosh, this is what I bathe in all day, is these emotions of people being, you know, afraid and at the end of their life or, you know, dying. And so I said, okay, I have a couple choices here. I can either be afraid and let it surely affect me. I can quit, which I'm not ready to do yet, or I can come in and project my, like I can bring healing, I can bring love, I can bring joy to these people that are here, and I can just really, really project my light out. And so that's the one I chose. And I remember people saying, wow, I feel so good when you come here. But I really had opened my eyes to that of I'm setting the intention that when I walk in this hospital, when I walk in this space, I'm going to have a bubble of light around me that I'm just going to give to people as I go through this space. And I did really learn that you get to choose whether you're the cure. Mm-hmm. And I think so much in the spiritual world, in the healing world, in the personal growth world, we put so much power outside of ourselves in the crystal, in the card deck, in the numerology, in the, you know, whatever tool it is, forgetting that yes, they are powerful and yes, they can support us, but we're the power. We're the part of God in our human vehicle. And we're the master going through to manipulate the energy and to change the energy. And it's a support tool for us. But mm-hmm. so often you see people give all the power to the tool, right?
Yeah. And that's one of the misconceptions with feng shui, especially in more of the Western world of feng shui, is that, oh, really? This crystal's going to make me rich? You know, I put this plant over here and now I've got money coming in, or this is going to fix my relationship. That's not what the purpose of that stuff is. It's something that you are putting a consciousness or an intention into that says, when I place this with a prayer, with reverence, that now it's placed in such a way that every time I enter this room, I'm remembered. I remember why I placed it, because we need those things. A lot of times we have stuff in our rooms that trigger us in bad ways, like a pile of stuff that is needing to be done, or something you got from, you know, a mother-in-law that you don't like, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of stuff. But when you have something, it triggers you subconsciously and reminds you of your connection with that space or with that intention that you placed. It's not the crystal. It's not the little, you know, Buddha statue that's curing the room or is the remedy or the solution. I agree so much that we've so externalized our human experience. You know, even if you don't use things like crystals or bells or oracle cards or anything, they're more of like a conduit, right? It's kind of like when you pick up the phone to call somebody, it's not the phone that's got the message in it. You're relaying the message and the other person on the receiving end is receiving the message. The phone is just a way for you to relay or open up that channel for that message. And so I think we need to take our power back, you know, and not only spiritually, but emotionally, physically. My daughter and I have started doing some recordings. We don't know if we'll ever post them or not. And you know, my daughter, she's 19. And we talk about these different topics that I have always been pointed out as that I'm different. You know, the way I parented, the way I see things. And one of the things is trust. I don't put trust into anybody or anything. There's no reason for me to give my trust away because they can do whatever they want with it. And then once I'm depleted of trust, I can't even trust myself. So there's two things that I trust. One is that is me, right? That no matter what happens, I'm going to be okay. I'm going to figure it out. I've got my helpful person upstairs in the studio with the door closed, whatever I know I can make it through. Always have. In fact, that's been my husband's and my motto since day one is everything always works out. Mm-hmm. The only other thing I can trust besides that is that there's a bigger picture. And my little brain has no idea or capacity to even understand that. And that's part of me trusting myself that it'll work out. There's a bigger plan, whatever you think that is, whether it's an alien experience or God's plan or whatever, that we're just this fleeting blip on this timeline. And I'm playing this role right now. So I have to trust whoever's in office right now, whatever's happening in the world right now, whoever's moving in across the street from me this year, that there's a plan. There's something going on, and there's lessons to be learned. There's value in everything. There's just opportunities. And so, yeah, pull it in, tune out, turn it off, and tap into yourself, because this is the compass. One of the things that I tried really hard to be conscious of, you know, being a parent, is not to dismiss the children. The children are the main motivator why I got down this spiritual path to begin with. And it started like in 1995, I think. Is that we teach children to not trust themselves. And it's so detrimental. And that's why we have people who are, you know, whether they're following false prophets or looking for outside validation. How do I fit in? Who am I? Where do I belong? What am I? Is when a child comes up to you and says, I'm hungry. You're not hungry. We just had dinner. How could you be hungry? You just dismissed their own internal compass, their own internal guidance system. We don't sit and say, oh, okay, well, we just had dinner. So is your belly hungry? Are you hungry for some attention? Are you hungry to maybe go outside and play? Are you hungry to, you know, for some rest? What are you hungry? What's the hunger that you're requesting? So that they can learn what to ask for and to seek out. So then what we do, and this, I'm a total, you know, result of this, is always having to yield to what the authority in the room is saying. And we give up our own authority. We give up our own sovereignty and our own way of looking at the world and navigating, because we're looking to what my dad over here, even though I think he's a complete idiot, he must know more than me because he's my dad. So I'm going to listen to him. Mm-hmm. It took me a long time to figure that out, way too long. And it's disappointing that it took that long for me to realize that that's what we've done to ourselves. Generation after generation, we just dismiss our own voice. And I think it's unfortunate. And I think we need to really pull in and tune out, because there's no way this world is filled with everybody being an expert in politics or an expert in medicine. We're listening to the wrong people. And I had to go through this just recently, you know, where I get to a point where I'm dealing with my own physical health issues, and I doubt myself. So then I surrender. Okay, fine, I'll go to Instacare. I walk out of there crying because they didn't hear me, right? They just want to check off some boxes and then get me out the door and write me a prescription. He wanted to write me like 4 prescriptions. And I'm like, oh, I was so frustrated. It's like, damn it, why can't I trust myself? Because I just proved that I can't trust those people either, right? So it's a tough thing to navigate, but I think it's because we're looking out here.
Yeah.
And yeah. I know you can relate to that.
You were the first person that you really helped me start to look at these younger generations in a different light. Like, as you're talking about, you know, the journey of learning to trust yourself, the journey of us really starting to look at things differently, of like, just because you're older doesn't mean you're wiser, right? Just because. And so, you know what you were for me is you were the ultimate mirror for me. When you said before, you were like, you said, I didn't give myself enough credit. Yeah, I didn't. Absolutely. 100%. But you held up that mirror and you were like, Jen, you actually are this. And I remember being like, I am really. But you also, when I say you helped me so much with healing my relationship with my children and me, just being a better mom, I started to look at those things you're talking about of like, we're not here to control our children. We're not here to, you know, beat them into submission. And so, yeah, I mean, I think it's really hard to do what you're saying, as far as like teaching our children to trust themselves. I think it's hard because we are so conditioned and we have been morphed into, you know, what we are as a, by the time we become a parent, we've got a lot of work to do, a lot of unraveling to do ourselves. But love, I love that concept. You know, when you talk about if a kid says, I'm hungry, and you go, no, you're not. It's the same type of thing with several things that we do as a parent. When you listen after, you know, so many of you parents, you're going to start to see these things that you do. I do it all the time. The other day, Mia, our daughter, she knows what she's doing. She's smarter than all of us. I'm not saying smarter than all of you listening. I'm saying in our household. But she comes out and she has her shoes in her hand. And Danny yells from the car, you're not wearing those shoes. And she goes, yes, I am. And he goes, no, you're not. And I'm like thinking, you know, like we tell our kids like what shoes they have to wear. If they have to wear a coat, you're cold. No, I'm not cold. Well, it's 20 degrees outside. Okay, well then at least carry the coat, right? But do they have to really put it on? But we love our kids so much. We think, oh my gosh, I don't want my kids to be hungry or cold or, you know, any of these things. And so it shows up as control, right?
Yeah. And one of the, you know, I had some wonderful mentors and one of them was actually the director of the school that my children were going to when they were little. They were in Montessori for a long time. And I remember dropping my daughter off at school and you know, you pull up and the teacher comes out and gets them out of the car. And the teacher just leaned in the window and she said, you're the only parent here that lets your daughter dress themselves. Because everybody else, their hair is perfect and their outfit matches. My daughter goes to school with mismatched socks and nothing, you know, her hair is wacky. And she says, you're letting her express herself. And it's so valuable at this age, you know, and it was like first grade. And I thought, really? I was just done with the power struggles. That's all I was doing. But that little, you know, recognition's like, oh, really? Okay, I'm not going to fight this anymore. You're right. I am giving her this sense of self-expression. And this something happened to me in the last to Doug and I, my husband, in just the last couple years, which was we weren't expecting from our children. We just have two children, 25 and 19. And we thought maybe they might say something, you know, maybe in their 30s or 40 or when they have kids. But my daughter, she was 17 and she said, we were in the living room and she said, oh, don't get me wrong. I know I hit the jackpot on parents. I was floored, you know, because I'm like, you don't have to say that, you know, I get it. But you know, she has said that before. And even my son, shortly after that, he came up and he said, he was complaining about a friend and his family. And he said, why can't everybody just raise their kids like you guys raised us? And it was like, oh my gosh. I mean, it was not easy by any means. We struggled. But our other motto was we always keep it real and we just dealt with things as they came. But that them being able to say that and recognize that at that age was really powerful for me and really kind of put me like, okay, I guess I did okay.
They're like, we did a good job. We chose the right parents. I always say that to my kids. You guys chose us. So
that's right.
But what a blessing. What a beautiful blessing to have two adult children that love and respect you and that say that. And I see how much your daughter respects you. I don't see your son very often, but you guys have a really, really, you have something really special, really special. Well, I think
that the same about you and your family when I see you all together and how supportive and how you are very much a family. You know, we're in our home, we're very much four different people. Yeah, we give each other space and we don't spend a lot of time together, but it's a different kind of family. But your togetherness is something I've always admired about you and Danny. Mm-hmm. And I know you both come from that's important. You know, our family is important. My family was split up. My brother lived with my dad. I lived with my mom since I was five. So it was a little bit different upbringing for me. And so I've always admired that in you guys, in the importance of bringing family together and sharing these moments and celebrating one another.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, we do anything, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. But when when you and I were working together, I was in it, because we were a blended family, and we are a blended family, and blended families are tough. They're really tough. And so I remember sharing things with you, and what I loved so much about you is your non-judgment. You were just so like, oh, okay, well, I felt that, like what you're saying, you allowed for your children. I was kind of an extension of that, of you allowing those different things in my life without trying to like enforce your own rigid opinions or beliefs. You know, when you share with people certain things, they many times add more damage to it with their advice. Because there's such judgment there. And so, for example, if somebody's struggling in their marriage, I'm always telling people that I coach with, be very judicious about who you share your challenges with in your marriage, because if you're sharing with your sisters and your mom and your friends, then many times they're going to just unleash all their judgment on you, mm-hmm. and about your spouse that they don't know. They don't know, you know, a lot about. And so that is a gift that you have. And I can see that your children have benefited from it, your husband, and then all of your clients as well, because that is something that I think is hard for people to do, to allow them to trust themselves, to allow and guide them. Mm-hmm. But not try to take over, not try to drive for them, not try to say, well, you need to do this or you should do that. You know, it's really a gift you have. So it's awesome. It's really powerful. On that note, I would like for you to kind of talk to, last week I did a podcast on the younger generations. And when I see you were one of the first, you were the first person, I believe, that I remember really saying, Jen, now look at it in this way of what you see with these younger generations, because the majority of the world looks at these generations, these younger ones, and go, oh boy, are we in trouble? Or, oh my gosh, you know, the world is doomed. And that's not how I see it. I know that's not how you see it. So kind of, I want to hear a little bit of, share with people a little bit of what you see with where the world is going. What do you see with these younger generations? Kind of speak to that for a sec.
Oh, yeah. This is a big one for me. I could go for days on. I've always seen the younger generation, and I would say probably 30 and younger, as spiritual warriors. You know, they really are to come in here. And one way I've seen them, and it's through my studies with Kryon, who is a channeled energy through Lee Carroll, is imagine these children, you know, standing on the wind of birth, you know, exhilarated to come to this planet because things are shifting, right? There's a new age that's upon us, and we can bring heaven to earth. We can wake everybody up. We can, you know, be in such a co-creative state that we can manifest and create anything, just like God. And they're standing at this wind of birth, and their support system is going, are you sure? Do you see what they're doing to each other down on that planet? They're killing each other. They can't listen. They can't even communicate with each other. Are you sure? Oh no, I can do it. This is the plan. I can do it. This is going to be amazing. And with, you know, okay, we got your back. Let's go. Boom. They're slammed into thick, sludgy concrete, a denseness that they weren't prepared for, that we've created, that we can't move forward. We can't see clearly. You can't swim quickly and swiftly and joyfully through murky water, right? Things are too stirred up right now. And bless their souls for coming here. I knew when I had my son, and even before then, that this generation was going to need different parenting. And that was my mission, is I'm going to help the children. And they're doing their best. And a lot of their purpose here is to reflect, is be the mirror that you're talking about, is to reflect back to us where we're struggling. The biggest thing I learned from my children, who are my greatest masters, and I've studied under some pretty great masters, is anytime a situation would come up with them, the first thing I did was reflect, check in with myself. Where am I not in integrity? Because they're pushing me. They're really pushing me in this moment. And where am I not standing up in a way that's integrous to my purpose in being here and who I am, aside from what strangers and passersby, the dirty looks they're giving me, or what my mom thinks I should be doing in this moment, or whatever. So that's the first thing I see them, is they're reflecting back to us where we're really struggling. A lot of them are here, they're going to take one for the team, right? They're here to shift the consciousness, and sometimes they are the sacrificial lamb for that. Right? They're the ones that are taking the gun into the school or doing something that stirs up a community that finally brings them together, that gets change to happen. So it's not to look at these children or these young souls, they're not young, but these young human beings, and to feel sorry for them or to be angry at them or to be worried about them. That's not a supportive vibe at all. That's the last thing I ever want from anybody that I know, is for them to worry about me. That's not helping me. You want to help these kids? Feed them your love. Feed them your gratitude. Feed them high vibes so that they can be who they're meant to be. We don't know what their path is. We each come with such a unique path. It's not for me to judge what their path is. And I'm a little... And maybe I do see things a little bit differently, but there's a lot of pain that is being expressed in these moments of despair. We need to touch that pain. They're exposing it. They're bringing it out, saying, this, why do we keep ignoring this? Whether it's mental illness or whatever, there's so much pain happening within us all right now. And these children are saying, why aren't you dealing with your own shit? Why do I have to deal with it? Why do I have to expose it and put it out there? That was one thing for me personally that frustrates me, even in my own family lineage, it's all being put on my shoulders to fix all those generations behind me. And so it was clear that I wanted to fix things in my family so that my children didn't have to carry that burden. These kids are carrying the burdens of the generations that came before them. And I think they're brilliant. Some of them are here to push buttons, to rebel, question authority, resist, whether it's your authority as a mom or your authority as the teacher or medicine or the government. That's their purpose. And they're doing a stand-up job. But they need our help. They can't do it alone. And then there's the other group of part of that kids, they're more that crystalline energy, that are the peacemakers. You know, that they're here to save the planet. They're here to clean up the beaches or to have the lemonade stand and raise funds for somebody who has cancer at their school. There's a really good balance of warrior energy and peacemaker energy in this group of people. And we just need to support them. and not be afraid of them, not be worried about our future. To me, the future is theirs. It's not mine. I mean, I'm only 56, but I look at it, in fact, you know, when, you know, we do write-in ballots here in Utah. When it was time to vote, I let my daughter sit down and vote. She wasn't old enough, but I let her fill out the ballot. She did all the research, and I let her. It's like, who do you want? This world is your future. Mm-hmm. I think us as parents or grandparents or great-grandparents, we should be looking at our younger people and saying, what kind of world do you want for your future? Because I still have some time here. I plan on being here for a long time. But there's a lot of people that are older that the majority of their life is done. How can we look back and support what's coming in? What is the world that they want? They should be the ones that are kind of guiding this and dictating this, and we should be listening to them. Years ago, in 2003, I went to the Psychic Children's Conference in Hawaii, in Kona. And there was people from all over the world, children from all over the world. They had these remarkable gifts. And it was an amazing weekend, you know, aside from swimming with dolphins and being with woo-woo spiritual people back then. But at the end, all of these children in all these different languages came up on this stage. And their main, and this is 2003, their main message to humanity was to see the children, really see them, and then listen. And that's something that has stuck with me ever since then, that we don't see them. We dismiss them. Oh, you don't understand. You know, you don't know. You're not experienced. You haven't been on this planet long enough. You need to give them space to see what's possible. And I think there's some that are misguided, right? Because they're reflecting the misguidedness of everybody else on the planet.
Yeah. Wow. I believe, you know, when you talk about those two groups of that two energy, I believe that I have definitely out of my youngest two, I've got the warrior and then the, what did you say? The crystalline was
the peacemaker.
Mm-hmm. I definitely see that. I was trying not to chuckle when you said that because it's so obvious to me. Right. Mm-hmm. But that warrior is more of that indigo energy, right? Mm-hmm. That indigo where they come here because they're strong enough to do it. To look us in the eye as a really young child. I think of Mia, and she came into the planet as your equal. She did not care if she was literally, she was 1 year old, and she'd look you in the eye and be like, no, which I know a lot of 1 year olds, you know, they have that energy where they're going to do what they want to do, but it never left her. And one thing that was so fascinating to me was one time I was at a baby shower. I was around a bunch of people that I didn't really like. I wasn't around them very often. And I found myself feeling all of a sudden, I had Mia with me. She came with me and she was only like 5 years old, and she ran in to go to the bathroom. Okay. At this house we were in. And all of a sudden I feel myself feeling really insecure, like just really uncomfortable, and thinking to myself, I can't wait till Mia gets back because she's 5 and she has this confidence and this energy that as soon as she sat back down next to me, I was fine. But it was that small talk and that I was feeling really not insecure, just uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And she just came into the planet with this bold confidence. And she also puts me in check, puts all of us in check, but she also, you know, she's that picture of that indigo child, that they are here to break down systems that are like, so what if you've done this for 100 years? Mm-hmm. It sucks. Mm-hmm. And it needs to change, right? Why are you doing it that way? And they're there to really be that chain breaker, you know? And then there's Drew, he's just such a gentle soul. And he's got those big eyes with the big eyelashes, and he's just calm, and he's got that more stable energy. And actually, I felt both of them in spirit form before I ever even got pregnant with both of them, each of them, right? I felt him, and I knew he was a male. I knew he was my future son, and his energy is exactly like it is in physical form. Mm. It's calm. It's right there by my side. It's there. And it's just that grounding, calm, peaceful, unconditional love right there. Right. And then Mia, I felt her before I ever got pregnant with her. I knew she was a girl, and she was like fluttering all around me. She's everywhere. She's, you know, I could feel her like more like a butterfly, like up, moving fast, you know, and just a lot. And that's how she is in life. She's just her energy in physical form is very what I felt in spirit form. So it's really interesting. But I love that I love to hear your perspective. And I know people will really benefit from hearing that. So thank you for sharing that. Okay. I want to get to, let's get to the energy of this year. I love hearing from you. You know, we're going to shift into the Chinese astrology. It's a big tiger year. We've got a triple tiger and a rat, right? One rat, three tigers. We're almost to month 8, which is bananas. This year is just flying by. What are you seeing when it comes to, how is that showing up? Like, kind of speak to what you're seeing and share with us. And what are you seeing for the rest of the year?
Oh gosh. Yeah. So in the Chinese New Year typically runs from around February 4th to the next February 4th. So really we're just at the halfway point for the Chinese year. And it's a turning point. So what we're talking about with three tigers and a rat, when we pull a Chinese astrology chart, you have four of the Chinese zodiac animals in your chart. And it also reveals how much you have of each of the five Chinese elements, metal, water, wood, fire, and earth. So we have a triple tiger year. And honestly, if I were to pull a chart for somebody and they had three tigers and a rat in their chart, I would tell them, and I would know without a doubt, that they have an intense life. When you have three animals in a chart, 75% of your chart is going to respond through that animal energy, through that personality, those characteristics. A tiger is the symbol of power and authority, prestige, royalty. It's a very divisive animal. It's the symbol of war. That's where we're at. In fact, February is the month of the tiger, and that's when Putin invaded Ukraine. That's a lot of tiger war energy. The divisiveness of the tiger and how this animal presents itself is, it doesn't like sitting on the fence. It doesn't like not knowing. Because when a tiger puts its energy towards something, it's all in. So it's either like, I'm not interested. I'm gonna go crawl it back up in this tree in the shade and chill. Or yeah, I'm freaking hungry. And so I'm gonna go after this hunt. So whatever it chooses to put its energy towards, it's gonna put in the same amount of energy, whether it's a little, you know, field mouse or a deer. The same amount of energy is going to go into stalking that animal, hunting it, preying upon it, pouncing on it. But which one is going to have the greater outcome, the greater result? Well, that mouse is just an appetizer. The deer will feed that tiger for the week. So this year, so much of it is about what's the product of what we're putting our energy into. The tiger, you know, in this kind of, I think this is the one animal of the zodiac that really doesn't fall under that kind of new age look at. It's the, you know, the journey is the destination, not for the tiger, because the destination for the tiger is always the same. It's the outcome. What is the outcome of what I'm going to do here? And that's what we have to focus on. I do a Chinese New Year event every January, as you know. And my motto for this year was fierce, focused, and hungry. We have to know what we're hungry for, right? What's the payoff? What's the big thing that we want? It might be something this week that I really want, or it might be that I just want to get really healthy, really feel vibrant and happy. Or it might be this amount of sales that I want to make in my business, whatever it might be, or purchase a house, go on a trip. What are you hungry for? And then stay fiercely focused on that. Because cats, whether you have a cat in your living room or you watch tigers and cougars on Nat Geo, they're so hyper-focused. There's no room for distraction because they're going to lose what they're going after. And so we need to always come back to our center and realign with what our focus is on what that outcome that we want. Maybe our outcome is peace on earth. Maybe our outcome is, you know, to live forever. Whatever it is, we need to stay focused on that. And along with that, divisiveness is getting off the fence. Pick a side. You can't get it wrong. You really can't. But you can't sit anymore because the world is dividing and that divide is getting really vast. Honestly, at the beginning of the, I usually start looking at next year's energy around September, October. I start pulling the charts, flying the stars, and I start sitting in meditation, looking for you know, visions and downloads. Because I want to stay here. This is where we are right now, is this tiger energy, the triple tiger. But it's like, where are we going with this energy in this divisiveness? And at the beginning of the year, I was a bit nervous for the Chinese New Year event. The last thing I want to do is get on a weekend call and sound like Debbie Downer. You know, I always want to give people hope, you know, or drive that, you know, hold that torch to say, even though it's going to be chaotic and it's going to be a shit storm, it is what it is. We've co-created this situation, whether you want to accept it or not, we have. And so how are we going to get through this? And we really do need to get on the fence. And one of my biggest concerns is as things are dividing, how do we coexist when there's such differences, when two people can be looking at the same thing and not be in agreement at all about what just happened? How do you coexist? How do you communicate when the line, it's like one of the visions I have is like, if you've got, like, I'm standing on one edge of the Grand Canyon and there's somebody on the other edge and there's this huge divide, I can't just like quickly run over there and go, hey, what do you think about this? I have to send smoke signals or a pigeon or something with some kind of a message. And is it going to be interpreted correctly? Am I going to get my response in time? It's like, how do we communicate across this vast divide? It's really interesting. I couldn't be more excited for this time. I feel like I'm here for this time. I was born to be here. I'm not an indigo child. I'm a crystalline child. I'm here to be here and to witness this. And I've just been waiting for this. And it's just exhilarating to me. But there's also that super empathic, compassionate side that knows that some people will be, you know, going down. They're losing their lives during this. Yes, maybe that's part of their mission. Maybe that's part of their calling, is to be that, you know, be in that classroom at that moment so that everybody else can rise up. The rest of the year, I'm not sure. I kind of tend to stay right here. Like in August, we're heading into a monkey month. The monkey is super unpredictable. So who knows what next month will bring.
That's interesting, because I know that monkeys are in opposition of the tiger. Mm-hmm. So that's, I know you have a double monkey. How's she doing, actually? I've thought about her this year.
She's doing pretty good. Yeah, my daughter's a double monkey, double horse in her chart. Yeah, she's actually navigating this pretty well.
Good. Well, she's got you to help this year. I have a monkey in my chart. I have a monkey in my emotion pillar. And I felt it this year. In fact, yesterday I said, Mia was like, "What, Mom, what are you okay?" And I was like, "Yes, I'm fine. But I just feel like crying." I was like, "I don't know why, you know?" And she goes, "Oh, come here," right? And I just, I don't know, like I felt that emotion this year. Not extreme, not every day. It's not like, oh, I'm gonna, you know, expect to have a really hard year because I have a monkey in my emotion pillar, but I definitely have felt it. And so if it's a monkey month, does that mean you get a little bit of help, a little support as the monkey, or no, does it not mean that?
It can mean that. Typically when you hit a period, whether it's like a month or a year that matches one of your animals, it will bring out the best and or the worst of you, of that pillar. Depends on the work you've been doing, right? Some people need to be pushed. Yeah. The tiger is here to teach monkey to take things a little more seriously in that aspect of their lives, to look at things a little bit. I have a tiger in my emotion pillar. So you and I are, you know, kind of opposing forces when it comes to emotional stuff. Both my children have monkeys in their emotional pillar, like you do. And that's always been something that we've, you know, have struggled with. The monkey is can be careless, but he's carefree. It's like, oh, it's no biggie. It'll be fine. They kind of, it's easier for the monkey to kind of let things go. But you're right, there will be some opposition, even more than what we've seen. A lot of, I think, of what people are feeling too this year is the amount of water and wood that's in the chart is high. We haven't had this. And if your chart, your personal chart, is already high in water, this can be a troubling time. Water speaks to depression, right? Not keeping your head above it, feeling like you're drowning. You need to be grounded. You need to have people in your life who are grounding, that can comfort you, you can reach out to, who aren't going to judge you, who aren't going to question you, that will just, you know, be a safe place for you to get your feet on, right? To have an anchor. Even if it's just sending a text out to somebody to anchor in. And I think that's one of the things that we're seeing now with all water and wood is actually what feng shui means. Mm-hmm. Feng shui, it's wind and water, and wind is wood energy and air in Western elements. That's storm energy. You know, that's what we're seeing. We're seeing these storms move across the planet, whether they're, you know, literal atmospheric storms or they're energetic storms or emotional storms that we're brewing. Some of us are in the path of those and we get hit, our homes, our lives get destroyed, but we rebuild. That's what we do, because that's what needs to happen. So I think there's a lot of opportunity for destruction, leaving certain things behind, certain ideals, certain beliefs that are outdated, that aren't gonna really serve the new world, our children moving forward, our grandchildren. And I think that's a good thing. And I think we just need to be open-minded to the possibilities of different, new, unexpected. I think we have great potential. I think we have a couple more rough years ahead of us. I think the 2024 will be somewhat of a big turning point. It'll be the year of the dragon. The last time we had the year of the dragon was 2012. That was the end of the so-called Mayan calendar. You know, it was a big turning point. And the last time, and the time before that was 2000, when we thought it was going to be Armageddon, right? Y2K.
Oh, so yeah.
we have something to look forward to. The dragon is, you know, you have a dragon in your chart, as do I. The dragon doesn't have a physical manifestation. It's of all the 12 Chinese animals, it's the mystical, magical creature. So it's not bound by the laws and the rigidness of humanity, the mundaneness. So it's about bringing in magic and opening up our world to new possibilities. And so I think we've got great potential. We've got some work to do, and some people are more resistant to it than others.
Wow. It's so interesting when you look back on those, when you can go, okay, this energy is, you know, we're in 2022. So when was the last time we had a tiger year? It would have been 2010. So you go, oh, 2009.
12 years, yeah.
2010, right?
Oh, 2010, you're yeah. right.
So then we go, you know, what was my life? What was happening then? But mm-hmm. you know, I've never thought about this. That's so fascinating. Thinking about the dragon year, and 2012 was a huge year for me. Huge. For that was a big year for me as far as really stepping into personal growth year, massive, right? And then 2000, wow, that was the year that my marriage fell apart. I had my son. It was a profound year for me. I've never thought about that, of what a big year the dragon years have been for me personally. Mm-hmm. Wow, that's really
and that dragon, whether you have a dragon in your chart or not, it's going to affect you, right? Mm-hmm. That dragon energy, that magical being. I mean, we don't understand dragon energy because it's make-believe, right? It's a fantasy. And so it's, what is it that is it is for some people, it'll be destructive. It'll be a fire breathing dragon that's going to wipe out, you know, a whole community. Mm-hmm. But for others of us, we can look at it as something. I've always seen the dragon as this creature. It's the only animal that can fly on the Chinese zodiac. So it has this ability to swoop up high into the heavens and see the bigger picture. Mm-hmm. And not sweat the small stuff.
Yeah.
It's like, why are you people getting, you know, caught up in the drama and the gossiping? The dragons hate that stuff. It's like, just look at the grandness of what you're creating here. And it was like, I can't remember, it was 1998. So it was like several years after the harmonic convergence, there was another turning point. And I can remember meeting my first big influence, spiritual influence in my life, one of the greatest masters, sisters, mothers, teachers of my life, sitting in her living room. And she said, "You have no idea what we're heading into, what we're creating on this planet." And she said, "There are beings from other universes that are pulling up their chairs to get a front row seat into what we're creating on this planet, because it's never been done before." What? Free will? You can't have free will? What does that mean? They're going to destroy each other. But we're creating something, and people, whether, you know, no matter what you believe, whether, you know, people are coming back, being reincarnated, or if there's reptilians walking the planet or other aliens or angelic realms in flesh or in ethereal form here to support us, we have so much support. It's unfathomable how much support we have on this planet to move us in the direction that these children are trying to get us to. We just need to get out of the way.
Wow. So with, because I hear this a lot, we hear about the new earth, we hear that, you know, our world is going into it's going to another place that is unlike where we've been, like drastically different, and the vibration is raising, and that, you know, we will be, in a sense, it will be heaven on earth, in a sense, right? A new world, but that will be so much better than it has been.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's the case, and I love to hear from multiple different way or different people in a different way, like whether someone, yeah, I mean, we've heard this from like Kryon, Dolores Cannon talks a lot about this. Eckhart Tolle talks about this. This couple that I had on my podcast that reads vibrations, they read the vibration for the future. They talk about it. It's so fun to hear that from many different people. But if Earth is like a classroom and it's the planet of duality, why, how is that going to happen? It's so interesting to me. And when you say it's never been done before, is it the reason it's so fascinating is because we do have the planet, or we are on the planet of free will, and we are actually going in the right direction? Is that why it's so awe-inspiring for these other beings to watch us?
Yeah, from what I understand, you know, and from similar kind of, you know, teachings and things that are being put out there, is that when you know, the main harmonic convergence, and I apologize, I can't remember what the date was of that. It was December 21st, but I can't remember the year, when there was a level of mass consciousness that when you reach a certain point, then the planet started waking up. And that's right on the edge of like Oprah. I mean, she had a mass public platform to start planting these seeds. She got pushback, she got bad reviews. Why are you talking about LGBTQ people? Why are you talking about this? Everything. She just had this platform that started hitting in people's homes, right? After school, during the week, you could tap into new ideas, new ways of looking at things. And she really opened to me the world for you to even talk about going to therapy or talking about meditation, that kind of stuff. So I think as far as where we're going as a planet, I think it's harder to predict. I think it was much easier to make prophecies or to predict where we were going before the wake up. Because now that people are waking up at whatever different level, whether you're waking up to just like owning your own shit or whatever, it's harder to predict because now people are practicing their free will because they've woken up. When you got a bunch of people practicing free will, that changes things. That changes, because prophecies and predictions are made off of the current energy. Based on the current energy, if we stay here, this is where we'll be. We can't do that anymore because we can, like, even time now. I remember, you know, all of us can remember when, you know, once a week, maybe twice a week, you'd hear on the news that there was a murder, or that there's a breaking news several times a day now. Right? It's not just once in a while you get that breaking, you know, interrupting your favorite show and the breaking news. So much is happening even in a day, even in a half a day these days. So it's really hard to kind of predict where we're going. I did hear one, every once in a while I scroll past Gary Vee. He's such a fun energy to kind of tap into once in a while. And he said, I can't remember what somebody had asked him, but he said, you know, just because the other side is having a winning streak, it doesn't mean the game is over. And so some of us, it's really easy to go, ah, see where we're at? It's all this minority group that's got the loudest voice, and they're the only ones we're seeing on the news. And this is the world. It's horrible. But it's the majority that has common sense, that lives more in the middle, that just wants this to be, you know, for everybody. That's the majority. The majority isn't getting the voice right now because it's not as loud. And so it looks like the other team is losing or winning just because they've hit some balls, they've got some runs, but we've still got several innings left to the game. And so we can't give up. And I don't know how the game is going to end. I don't know where we're going to end up here. I don't know if I want to be here forever because I want to see it happen. It may not happen in my lifetime, but I'm sure as hell coming back because I want to be a part of this. I want to see what we can create here. It's been done before. You know, whether you look at the Lemurians or the Atlanteans, the Sumerians, we've created that before, but it was a different way. And then, you know, destruction came. So I think we're getting there. And I don't know much about the Western astrology, but you know, one of my colleagues is big into that. And it seems like the Chinese astrology and the Western astrology are kind of, you know, bouncing back and forth through the same kind of timeline. And it does feel like 2024 is somewhat of a shift. It's not going to be overnight, not like we want it. You know, we can't wake up and, you know, it all be better.
Yeah, I love how the different energy tools, like the Western astrology, the Chinese astrology, numerology, they all kind of coincide and weave in together. As you said that, I was thinking, well, what is 2024 for numerology? And it's an 8, which is very powerful. Mm-hmm. Very, very powerful. So very exciting. That's how I feel right now. I feel like there's never a dull moment on planet Earth these days. Like, who needs to watch TV? Because it's literally like, just look at what's happening, you know, in the world. I mean, who needs to watch a drama, right?
Yeah, right.
Sometimes it's good to just unplug from the real drama and just watch a fake drama, because it's like, it really is so intense. But wow. Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for being here. Is there anything else you want to leave us with? Anything else you want to tell us before we end here? What's your message for the world right now, my dear?
Oh, that was a big one. I think we have everything within us that we need. And I think we need to tune out the negativity in things that lower our light, that dim us. Because we are the light. And like you said, there's a lot of talk in the New Age that we need to protect ourselves. That's nothing I've never been about, because then I'm giving attention to something that I don't want. Instead, just brighten up your light. In fact, I met with a lady the other day, and she says, gosh, one thing I do whenever I'm feeling kind of low is I go inside and I turn up the volume on my light, right? To, you know, whether it's reaching out and helping somebody or holding space for somebody or holding the light. I don't hold space for people. I hold the light. If I hold space for people, I start gaining weight like crazy. So I'll hold the light for you. Hold the light for each other, and keep it light. Bring levity, bring joy, laughter to these moments. Because when the world is going through turmoil, we can't all jump down that hole with it. Those people in Ukraine or in Uvalde or Brooklyn or California with the fires, they don't need everybody right there in their space. They need anchors. And we're, you know, some of us are here to anchor the rest of the world as it's spinning off course. It's kind of like, you know, Drew and Mia, it's the yin and the yang. Mm-hmm. There's going to be times when you're going to need other people to anchor you. So don't get caught up in all of it. Send your light, which is love.
Yeah. Beautiful. Thank you. Thank you so much for being
Thank
here
you
with
so
me today.
Much.
I want to let everyone know that if they want to learn more about feng shui, if they want to have a personal reading with Tina, that for your Chinese astrology charts, super fascinating and really insightful to, you can have it done for yourself or also your friends, your family, your children. Really helps to know your spouses and each of your children. So if you want that, then I will put a link in the show notes on how to contact her. And just thanks for being a part of this beautiful conversation with us. And thanks again, love.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone.
Bye for now.
Do you have a coach? I would love to take this journey with you to dive deep and start to shift those areas to create a life that truly honors you. I'll meet you on that bridge at whatever level you are ready, with either group or one-on-one coaching. You can check out my programs at jensuliafu.com/programs. Also, go ahead and hit that subscribe button and rate and review this show and give me your feedback. Also, please share this with your friends and family and be a lighthouse out in the world. Thanks for joining me.